This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we are underway this hour. It is Tuesday, April 16th, as we get things going on Flames Talk this hour and we get the sports drive going. Brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. A little bit later on this hour, Wes Gilbertson will join in. We'll talk about a great opportunity for Connor Zary Tuesday night in Vancouver. But we're going to kick off this hour by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Mr. Saravalli, great to chat with you as always. And, you know, as the Flames roll into Vancouver Tuesday night, it's game 81 of 82, and means it's the final time this season you and I are going to be talking about the Flames while they're still playing. Next week, everything will be done, and they'll have wrapped things up with their locker clean out and a whole lot more. So knowing that, and knowing that they're 80 of 82 in the books, I'm just curious from your standpoint and what you've observed, how do you encapsulate this season for the Flames? How do you wrap this kind of tumultuous year into a nutshell?
Finally, some stability. And not to say that it wasn't stable the last couple years prior, you know, in the real thick of it, but think about what they're looking at now. You've got your coach, you know, for the most part, who's sticking around. Maybe a question about Jacob Markstrom and the goaltending, and a real fair question and significant one to figure out. But you, for the most part, you know who's going to be here. You've got your general manager, and now you can begin to kind of build it up. And it, when I say build it up, I want to be careful in not, you know, hyping up expectations and or fan thoughts, because look, this is still going to be a process and it's still going to be multiple years, but the teardown part, I think for the most part, is over. Now, are there going to be other players that move on at some point? Andrew Mangiapane, et cetera? Sure. To be expected. But now you know, and that's probably a pretty comforting feeling for the Calgary Flames.
What's your read on kind of, I know it's technically off season two for Craig Conroy, but in terms of actually putting his plan in place, it's kind of off season number one for
him. Dude, it's off season one.
Yeah, I mean,
this he had been in pure trauma mode, just trying to, you know,
clean up messes.
Yeah, it was like running a MASH unit the last year. I mean, you're just every day you're assessing some other crazy headache that has, you know, for the most part, been difficult to stop the bleeding at times in terms of who's out the door and who's staying.
Yeah. So what's your feel on kind of the game plan for offseason number one for Craig Conroy?
Patience. Smart, methodical moves targeting specific players for free agent acquisitions. I'd say the Flames might be in an interesting spot or two to make a trade. And other than that, I'm really interested to see this organization flex a bit of its scouting muscle. Because this is a one that for the most part hasn't had many picks. And second, it's really clear to me that Craig Conroy relies on and really trusts his scouting staff, maybe more than some others, because look at the prospects that they've gone out and targeted. Those are, I guess you'd call them curated selections. They weren't necessarily at the top of the list for some teams or how others viewed their other teams' prospect pools that they made trades with, but they knew what they wanted and they went and got it. And that part, for better or for worse, is really interesting. So we won't know for 3 years of time whether or not they hit on those players, but I think the early returns have been really good, and it shows that they're on the ball. So can they continue that trend? And what market inefficiencies can the Flames find with relative to value based on how they perceive players and how they might be perceived elsewhere?
Yeah. And then on top of that, two first round picks in this year's draft and some draft capital in that regard. And you're right. I mean, that market inefficiency, that's it started with Sharon Govich last summer, and that's
100%.
That's kind of the type of moves that I think they might be looking to make again going forward. See if you can get somebody that is undervalued elsewhere that you see a real payoff on somewhere.
The harder part doing that now is going to be, what do you want to part with? You know, it's one thing when you're dealing UFAs that, yep, you know, aren't going to be part of your team. It's another thing to be plucking off roster players and or draft picks to make it happen. But we've seen other teams make really smart moves like that. I think a great example, since Arizona's been in the news, is the Coyotes leveraging all the second round picks that they have to get Sean Durzi out of LA for just a second. I mean, that guy to me is a first round pick plus all day long. They found the right period of time in June where LA felt like they were backed into a corner. They had Jordan Spence coming and some other players, Brant Clark, that they're thinking, we don't have room for these guys, and I can't pay him the RFA contract he needs. I got to find a way to move him. Why can't Craig Conroy be at the front of the line to get a mid-20s defenseman that can help this team now and for the future?
Yep. Let's move to Arizona, as you brought it up there. Where are we? What are we now waiting for in terms of kind of next steps or the next bullet point as this move to Utah and all of what goes into it continues?
We're pretty close. I'd say the framework of the deal is complete. Now it's really just the papering process. I think they're pretty far down the track. I think they're getting more comfortable with the language. This has been an around the clock sort of effort for the last week to 10 days now. There was a Sportico report yesterday that the Board of Governors, the smaller executive committee of that, of which N. Murray Edwards is part of, that he would have approved or been voting to approve that it continue and move forward. It will ultimately require the larger full 32-member Board of Governor approval. Haven't gotten to that point, to my knowledge, yet. And it's something that, you know, the league wants to just make this as airtight as possible before they get to a point where they feel comfortable having an official announcement be made and Ryan Smith address the team before they go their separate ways for the offseason, and also to have Alex Mariello make a public statement to fans, whether that's answering questions or not. If they're ultimately ever going to do business with him again, there's going to need to be a lot of rehabilitation of his image in the marketplace based on how this played out.
Frank, how did we get here? I went back and I was going back and, you know, tracing back my timelines. It's like, okay, when did the Jerry Moyes thing hit the fan? And it was kind of 2008. So we've been here for 15 years with the NHL fighting tirelessly to keep the Coyotes in Arizona. And then all of a sudden, one day it's just, you know what, hands up in the air, and we've got this prospective buyer. Let's make it happen. How did we get to the point that the NHL was finally okay with a relocation?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot to unpack. I'd say the most fundamental question is, could Alex Mariello, as owner of this team, guarantee a date in which the Coyotes would have a new arena standing and they're playing in? He was obviously unable to do so. And I think for a while, as the NHL began broaching this subject, I think sometime in January, but I think it really got serious about 6 weeks ago, he was pretty resistant and combatant to this idea of relinquishing control of the franchise. And It took probably more money than the NHL ideally wanted to pay. I heard that at some point they were at $900 million. It ended up at $1 billion. They had to entice him to step away. And the hook was not just the money, but also the idea that you have the option to reactivate your franchise in a 3 to 5 year period down the road. You say you're going to go build it, go do it, and then come back to us and we can have this conversation and let you back in. There's no guarantee that happens. I think, in fact, the NHL is probably betting with him that it doesn't, and probably a pretty smart bet. So there was a lot of other embarrassing things that had popped up for the league in relation to Alex Mariuolo before. So it was about an arena. It was about getting out from under the stewardship of, you know, an owner that they, you know, I don't think they trusted. The trust had eroded. And it was also about placing this team that has been neglected for 2 decades now into the hands of someone that can actually do it. And Ryan Smith, not the quarterback, has proven through his ownership of the Utah Jazz that he can. And so it's a growing market. And I saw some of the commentary. Brian Burke was pretty full-throated yesterday on Kipper and Bourne, saying this is the, you know, dumbest thing he's ever seen, going from a market of 6 million to a market of 1.3. And Brian Burke's a really smart guy, but that's one of the most idiotic takes I've seen. You can't have a team in a market of 6 million people if you don't have an arena. So good luck.
Yeah. Well, and you know, being from the area and having been to Salt Lake many times, I think it's going to work. I think it's I think they're underserved. I think that there is a real ownership of all people in Utah on Spike. I think it's going to be really well received. And
did you say you were from the area?
Wow. If you take a look,
do you just consider the entire goddamn mountain time zone?
Absolutely, that's my area. The amount of times I've driven I-15, I feel like I'm from the area. And
dude, what a flex!
I probably could have rephrased that. Being in the relative geographical same area, relative being the key word.
Next door neighbors in Hawaii too? Like, what are we talking about here?
You should see. I'm from Florida too.
Man Pat Steinberg.
I feel like it's gonna work, Frank. I really do. And
I am 100% convinced it's gonna work. And if you've been following my reporting,
which
you know that I'm not a Kool-Aid drinker. I say it like it is, and for better or for worse, gets me into trouble all the time, including this entire run up to this story where for 6 weeks I've been telling you that this is on the table and the NHL is working on things, and I've been absolutely ridiculed by the Coyotes fan base. I think this is a true win-win for everyone. Mariuolo gets his money. The league gets out for Mariuolo. Ryan Smith gets his team. He gets a team better than an expansion team. The NHL gets a growing one of the 413 metropolitan areas in the U.S. Salt Lake City is the fourth fastest growing. I mean, this it's affluent. It's got a burgeoning tech base. There's so many things to like about Salt Lake, and no one's saying we're discarding Arizona. They're not. They're going to be back in Arizona before you can blink. We're going to be doing a show together 5 years from now, Pat, and we're going to be talking about Arizona getting a team back, and it's all going to make sense.
Yeah.
And I actually think the Coyotes fans, as painful as this is right now, this is better for them in the long run. It's a win for them because they're going to get a team back that's playing in a new arena with a better owner, and it's going to be just like the Minnesota Wild. Can you believe there's a period of time in the 1990s, 6 years, that the Minnesota didn't have an NHL team?
Yep.
How blasphemous is that? And they got their arena built. They got the right owner. And we haven't heard a hiccup about Minnesota having an issue ever since.
Yep.
Imagine how that works.
Yep. What? There's been a lot of reporting about, you know, how Coyotes players are feeling. They've got one more game at Mullet Arena before this move goes official. What are you hearing from Coyotes players? Is this being met with skepticism, excitement, disappointment? What have you heard?
Look, I'm not going to disparage or knock any of the reporters out there, especially those that kind of have a skin in the game in the sense that their livelihood might change based on this team disappearing. Are there a couple players that are probably slightly disappointed to leave the Sun in Arizona? Sure. But from almost all that I can gather, there's a lot of excitement. I had a player tell me, what part of this is bad for our team? We're finally going to feel like we're in the NHL again. We've had the worst plane, the worst food, the worst hotels, the cheapest budget for our staff. Everywhere you turn, it's been a disaster. Why can't, you know, why on what planet would this be a downturn for us with how excited Ryan Smith is to get a team? He already knows what he's doing.
Yep. Yeah, I'm excited to see it, and it's going to be an interesting next few months as we learn more and more about what this Utah-Salt Lake organization is going to be all about. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk. Let's move to news of the day on Tuesday. What was your reaction when you found out the Sabres have fired head coach Don Granato?
Surprised, and you know, we saw a lot of Sabres fans on social media saying, man, had to be done, about time. Obviously, I'm not in it on a day-to-day basis there, but I watch that team no different than I watch anyone else. And from a pure 30,000-foot view, I never looked at the Sabres this year and said, you know what? Coaching is what's holding that team back. I think they made a bunch of bold bets. I think they, going into this season with Devon Levi, jumping a level in a way that just isn't done. Goalies don't play in the NHL, in the AHL. You don't skip from junior or from college, excuse me, to the NHL. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Tom Barrasso's in the Hall of Fame in part because of that, because he was the rare guy that could. And they're missing and are deficient in key areas. They got pushed around. They didn't have the size, too much reliance on Tuck and Tage Thompson. And as good as JJ Paterka has been this year, I mean, look at any team that's really good. I look at the Oilers. How hard did they push to try and get a sixth forward to fill out their top six, and how long did it take them?
Yep.
The Sabres are like 3 to 4 short. Probably three short from a legit top six. Now, that said, they've got an unreal blue line. Dahlin, Power, Samuelson, and Bowen Byram. Sign me up for that all day long. I think their defense is going to go toe-to-toe with everyone else in the league. But right now, they needed to do more. They thought their young guys could do more, and they didn't. And now Don Granato is paying the price. And I think that's unfortunate. But what it does do is it really starts the clock ticking on Kevin Adams.
Yeah. Yep. Any ideas as to which way they might want to look for a coaching replacement? Do they go more established? Do they go younger? Or any idea on that front?
I have no idea. I didn't have a chance yet to dive through or dive into.
It just happened today. So that's,
yeah, well, to dive into the Kevin Adams press conference and get, yep, a sense of what he's feeling. But I'll tell you this, there's a lot of good candidates out there. Jay Woodcroft, Craig Berube, Todd McClellan, DJ Smith might be better a second time around. There's lots of guys that have been in quality situations before that, hey, Sheldon Keefe might just be able to flip across the border, depending on what happens with the Toronto Maple Leafs and their playoffs. There's lots of options. And frankly, there's some urgency to do it because St. Louis, LA, and Ottawa all have interim openings. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be busy the next couple weeks, and it's a critical hire for GM Kevin Adams. Cannot stress that strongly enough.
Any other, you just mentioned the three spots with interims. You mentioned Sheldon Keefe in Toronto. Are those some of the other coaching stories we're watching as we move towards the offseason and move towards more of those decisions being made?
There's no other ones that I can think of right now. I mean, New Jersey, too. We didn't mention, and I did see some Sabres fans clamoring, bring Lindy back. I can't see it. Don't know why it would make sense. Although maybe there's some kind of connection. But Travis Green and his situation in New Jersey also bears watching as well.
Okay. All right. Let's get to the fun stuff. This Eastern Conference playoff race, which has taken another turn since you and I talked about it 1 week ago. Here we are. This race is going right down to the wire with four teams fighting for one spot. How, first of all, it's been a long time since we've seen something like this in that conference, which is awesome. How are you reading it? What are the most likely scenarios in Frank Saravalli's mind?
I mean, the math heavily favors the Caps, I think.
Yep.
They've got the easiest path. Just, you know, that game starting here in a little bit. You know, just beat the Flyers in any fashion. Overtime, shootout, whatever it takes, regulation, all good. Charlie Lindgren's been on fire. That's certainly to keep in mind. And everyone else needs help. So, you know, the Red Wings with a Caps loss, even if the Caps get 1 point, they're in a pretty decent spot. They've got a few things that could happen. The Wings have been the cardiac kids. I mean, watching that
unreal
third period last night was just, that's everything hockey should be, including the Shane Gostisbehere keep at the blue line to make that Lucas Raymond game tying goal happen. It's been fun. I'd say the Caps, to me, every time they've sagged, they've found a way to come up with a clutch win, and that can't be discounted.
Yep. And finally, and again, we talked about this last week, and it's taken another turn. Connor McDavid returns, gets to 100 assists. Nikita Kucherov keeps on putting up points. Here's Austin Matthews and his situation. This Hart Trophy race and the way that this shakes out is going to be, as you said last week, and probably even more so now, like, can you ever remember a more heated and more interesting Hart Trophy conversation, at least in recent memory?
Well, I can. It was just before I started covering the league and started voting.
Okay.
It's got to be the Jerome year, right?
The Jerome Jose Theodore year?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it, right? I mean, it's never been closer than that, and statistically, it can't ever be closer than that.
Yep. What?
By the way, just if you want to enjoy yourself and have a nice laugh, obviously I'm not Canadian and not French Canadian.
Yeah.
And one time I was on national television in Canada once, and I called him Jose Theodore, and they said, oh, no, he's not Spanish. So,
so I do like that. You kind of gave us your thoughts on where you are last week. What, do you have any sense as to how it's actually going to play out, though? Like, in terms of how the voters might go?
What are you asking me to preview?
Well, yeah,
predict it? Reveal my sources as the guy who makes the list of voters? What,
no.
Should I have polled them for you for Flames Talk and asked what they're thinking and
no,
corrupted
more
their
so,
vote?
You're a smart guy. You know how the things skew as these votes start to come in.
I don't, first off, just so everyone knows, I don't see the votes come in. They go to the NHL's accounting firm.
Yep.
And they tally them up. I have no idea. What I would say is the sense I get from just reading social media is that a lot of people seem to be leaning toward Nathan MacKinnon, and that makes him the favorite. There's obviously been a push for Austin Matthews as he's closed in on 70. That has been real. I still am leaning at this moment in time to Nikita Kucherov. The best way I can say it is this. If you're a literal voter, which I guess depending on the year, I'd say sometimes I am. He has 53 points more than his next closest teammate. If you want some perspective, the Buffalo Sabres leading scorer only has 59 points total this year. That's a huge margin. And you could pick apart any player's case, but for me, one of the big things that stands out is just how good Kucherov has been against top 10 teams in the league. Over 2 points per game.
Yep.
That's insane. And so I think he fits the category of literal voter, most valuable to his team. I think there's a real strong argument to be made that he's also the best player in the league this year. Now, I've seen some people trashing him on social media also saying, well, he's a negative defensively. Okay, I mean, I guess, like, the best offensive players have been forever. So then the next thing is, well, Austin Matthews should be in the Selke conversation. Okay, sure, but he's, like, forever back of those other guys, and Connor McDavid almost has as many assists as he has points.
Yep.
I mean, look, you could skin it any which way you want. I refuse to sleep on Artemi Panarin. I refuse to allow a Russian bias to or anti-Russian bias from creeping into my reporting and how I look at it. And I think this is as good of a race as we've seen in forever.
Yep. Can't wait to see how it all plays out in a couple months' time. Can't wait to see how this Eastern Conference playoff race plays out either. Frank, great stuff as always, man. We'll do it again next week. We'll be well into the first round when we talk again next week, my friend. Thanks for doing this as always, hey.
Have a good one, Pat.
Frank Saravalli, our daily face-off NHL insider. Just loves giving me a hard time. Yeah, general area geographically, Calgary is exactly like 12 hours due north of Salt Lake. Yeah. I think that's geographically general. Yeah. When you're used to driving 12 and 14 hours is second nature, and when we do that in our sleep like we do in Western Canada, Salt Lake feels like in the area.
Yeah.
Look, I don't care what you think. I don't care what Frank Saravalli thinks.
Yeah, no, buddy. I'm thinking about going to Salt Lake for the weekend.
Okay. That's many of us would. 12 hours, that's nothing. Get up.
Everyone who's gone to Salt Lake driving for the weekend, make sure you text in and let Pat know he's on to something.
I've done multiple Boise, Idaho weekends, and that's an even longer drive. It's 14 hours to Boise.
You're out of your mind.
I could be out of my mind. That could very well be part of it. Somebody texts me, he's like, Pat, it's like a 13-hour drive. That's nothing.
Yeah.
Seattle for a weekend, Boise for the weekend.
You know, I'm just going to go play. I'm gonna go hit Yellowknife for the weekend.
That might be a little longer. I don't know how long the drive to Yellowknife is.
I don't think it's much longer than Salt Lake City.
Don't know if there's as much in Yellowknife as there is in Seattle or Salt Lake. Not certain. Have never been. Can't vouch one way or the other. You know what? Before we go too far down a rabbit hole, let's just say that's Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. Brought to you, as always, by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
This is Flamestock. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's go inside hockey on this Tuesday for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. It's Salt Lake Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you as we roll on this hour. Y'all can beat it. It's nothing. 12 hours? It's nothing. Everybody's just crushing me. He's like, what do you mean that's a day trip?
You deserve it.
A little bit. Hey, for where the Flames are in their season, I think Tuesday night in Vancouver, also in the area, I think that's a really good opportunity for the Flames. This is as close to a measuring stick as the Flames in a situation like they're in are going to get. Going up against the number one team in the division with an opportunity to clinch the division with a point or a win. They'd like to do it with a win, of course. that also keeps top spot in the conference in the mix as well. There's a Canucks team ramping up for the playoffs, and they're going up against a rival in their final home game of the regular season. You take all those things into account, and this is going to be a really difficult matchup for the Flames, and I think a really good indicator as to where a lot of young players are and where a lot of these guys getting opportunities. Matt Coronato, Ilya Solovyov, Martin Pospisil, Adam Klapka, all these guys will play in this game against Vancouver. But the guy that comes to mind ahead of all of those names is Connor Zeri and the opportunity that he's got in this game against the Vancouver Canucks. Like, this is a great chance for Zeri to go head-to-head against a very good high-end center on the other side. Because right now, with Elias Lindholm back in the lineup, West, the Canucks are as loaded as any team in the NHL.
They're stacked
down the middle
at center, aren't they?
Because they are fine going Elias Pettersson and JT Miller at center away from one another. And now Elias Lindholm centering their shutdown line with Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua. You know, right now, like, that's a team that is going to cause matchup issues for anybody on the other side, and for a team like the Flames, even more so. So the reason why I'm so interested about Zeri specifically is because, let's just assume for the sake of this conversation, I think it's a decently safe assumption regardless, that Rick Tocchet, last change on the Canucks bench, wanting to win this hockey game, throws the Lindholm line out against Calgary's most dangerous line, which is Kadri, Kuzmenko, and Pospisil right now. That means Connor Zeri is, for a good chunk of the night, at 5-on-5 going up against either Elias Pettersson or JT Miller. Like, talk about sink or swim for a guy playing his sixth game in the NHL down the middle. And I love that. That, to me, is what this time of year is all about. If you're Zeri, yeah, go out and play against elite opposition as he continues to acclimate himself to the toughest position, the toughest forward position in the sport.
Yeah, and you know what I like about it, buddy, is that we've heard Connor Zeri say over the past few days that he feels like he's found his game again, that he feels like, after that injury layoff, after being a healthy scratch, after struggling to get the pace back to the level that he needs it and expects it to be at, that he feels like he's sort of found himself again out there. And I think that's really important tonight because, you know, this could go, I think, into the category of one of those tough lessons, ultimately, because we're talking about three really talented centers on the other side. And if he winds up against Elias Pettersson or even against a guy who plays the style that JT Miller does, like, there could be some tough lessons learned. But I do think Connor Zeri is in as much of a position to have success tonight as he possibly could be because he's feeling good about his game, because he's flashed some chemistry with the guys we expect to be his line mates tonight, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm at the point now with the Connor Zeri at center experiment where I expect it to bleed into training camp. Yep. I do expect at this point that we're going to see sort of a mix of center and wing come fall for Connor Zeri, but I'm really curious to see how he holds up tonight. And I think you said it yesterday. It's sort of, you can't go wrong. If things go sideways, it's a really good lesson for Connor Zeri. If he performs really well against those guys, it's a really good confidence booster. You can't really lose in that sense. And so I do think that's a good scenario for the Flames and especially for Connor Zeri.
Yeah. I just feel like, hey, to just echo exactly what you're saying, super encouraging if he goes out. And I thought the two games where he's played like good teams down the middle, thought the first game was Edmonton,
yeah,
and was Ryan McLeod was the guy he was up against, and I thought he did a hell of a job. I thought that he was really good against the Oilers, going head to head against McLeod, who's kind of their third line center. On the other hand, I thought he struggled going head-to-head for the most part against Philippe Deneau and the Deneau-Arvidsson line against L.A. last week. I thought that was a night where he didn't fare as well.
Yeah, I thought that was the toughest one of his audition at center and so far.
And the toughest matchup that he's gotten so far. Deneau, yeah. No knock on Ryan McLeod, but Philippe Deneau's a really good center.
Until 2.5 hours from now.
Exactly. Until this game against Vancouver.
Yeah.
And then... So if he gets the job done, does well, super encouraging, big confidence boost. Like, okay, that's yeah. You know, I know it's one game, but that's neat. Good for him. And if he gets absolutely run over and JT Miller takes him to the woodshed and just paves him right over in this game and it is completely lopsided, like, okay, well, oh well. That's a good learning opportunity. That's a good indicator of what the hell it takes to go up against some of the best centers in the NHL and a guy who's got more than 100 points. Then you take that into the offseason,
sure.
Into next year, say, geez, I got absolutely crushed by JT Miller.
Yeah.
Or Elias Pettersson made me look silly in that game. Well, you learn from it and you get better from it. And so I don't see a downside in this matchup. I just see it as a huge opportunity.
And that part never goes away. There's a lot of really good centers in the NHL who have, on certain nights, have their lunch fed to them by whoever it might be. And I think Connor Zary is certainly mature enough to know that. But yeah. if you have a good performance tonight, if he's even, if he's a plus player, if he feels like he holds his own in terms of, you know, shot volume and chances at either end of the ice, all those things, like that suddenly becomes a real nice sort of feather in his cap going into the offseason.
Yep. I'm excited for it. You and you've got an article coming out this week on
Yeah, Zary. Sometime this week. I mean, I think it's one of the biggest stories going into this offseason among the Flames, especially among the young guys, is where does Connor Zary fit long term, right? He's been a winger for most of his rookie season, but we're, you know, talking about a guy who grew up playing center in his hometown of Saskatoon in our area. We're talking about a guy who played center in junior and Kamloops in our area. And now we're talking about a guy who I think is starting to show that he could be capable of playing that exact position at the NHL level.
Here is Connor Zary. I'm sorry, this is funny. Well played by you. Here's Connor Zary. You spoke to him, I think it was late last week or early this week.
Early this week, yeah.
It all blends together. You spoke to him a little bit about the transition to center and how's it going so far. This is a little bit of the conversation with Connor and active listening Wes.
I think it's just the little details I got to bear down on and those little defensive zone things that you pick up on. But it's been good so far. I've been able to feel like I've been able to keep my feet moving and be good through the middle of the ice, and I think really bear down on the faceoffs, and those little things are going to help me obviously play with the puck, and that's what I want, to win faceoffs.
This is so tough to quantify, but how different is it? Like, how different are the two positions?
Yeah, I think it's obviously a lot different. I think you have a lot more responsibility, and especially in the D zone, but overall, once you have the puck playing on offensive zone, nothing really changes. The neutral zone doesn't really change. There's just that little bit of defense is on responsibility in the faceoffs. Obviously, there's a couple of different reads that you had to pick up on. But other than that, I think, you know, I played there before, right? I mean,
right.
Not at this league, but I've played in the American League. I've played junior. Like, I understand the yep. concept around center. So
sure.
It's not really anything that's new that I'm trying to pick up on. I think it's just little things here and there.
So far, I think pretty impressed with his five games down the middle. Another thing that a smart person tweeted out earlier this week that I think is really important is, don't sleep on the importance of him and Jonathan Huberdeau and what that could mean. And that was Wes who tweeted that out. And I agree wholeheartedly. I've said that a couple of times myself. That's something that I think is also important here, that Jonathan Huberdeau has looked really comfortable with Zary as his center.
Mm-hmm.
And they play a similar, or I don't know if they play a similar brand of hockey, but I think they complement one another with the way that they play. And that, I think, is not insignificant either.
You know, when I chatted with Jonathan Huberdeau about this exact topic, I was sort of, I don't know if surprised by the answer is the right way to put it, but I was asking him about the chemistry and what's working. And he said to me, you know, the type of center that I like to play with is a center who's going to carry the puck up the ice. And, you know, when we think of Jonathan Huberdeau, a guy who's had a ton of offensive success as a playmaker in his career, you kind of think he always wants the puck on his stick. And yet to hear him say, yeah, I love it when the center takes it through the middle and then kicks it out to the wings, I kind of thought, geez, well, even if he wasn't playing with Connor Zary, we'd be having this conversation and I'd be standing there thinking, man, I wonder if it could work with Connor Zary.
Yeah.
And so far, I think there has been some pretty nice flashes there.
Looking forward to seeing it. We can evaluate on Wednesday as we wrap things up inside hockey on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. It's for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local, Calgary. From best from the West, Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in-store today. Wes Gilbertson on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers this hour as well. Have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. Thank you, Wes.
Yeah, we'll maybe chat again in an hour.
Yeah, could be somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
That'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.